Thank you. Good morning and welcome to MEKO's presentation of our results for the third quarter 2025. I'm here with our CFO, Christer Johansson, and together we will walk you through our performance and current position. As you know, the first half of this year was marked by slower growth and lower earnings. Car owners were cautious following a prolonged economic downturn and unpredictable global environment. This also led to intense competition in Q2. This tougher competition continued into the third quarter. We achieved organic growth of 1% during the period, compared with 2% in the same quarter last year. This also means that we moved from negative growth the first half year of 2025 to showing a positive sales trend in Q3. The competitive situation also put pressure on prices, which in turn affected our profitability. Our adjusted EBIT margin improved compared to the second quarter, but decreased compared with the same quarter 2024, and we are responding to this development. Among other things, we continue the rollout of our new central warehouses, where staffing levels will gradually be reduced. We also continue the cost-saving measures announced this summer. So let's take a look at that on the next slide. As you know, we have been working with the initiative Building Strong MEKO for some time. This initiative aims to improve our long-term profitability. By the end of Q2, we had achieved EBIT improvements of 200 million SEK within these initiatives. During the summer, we launched additional cost savings, adding another 100 million SEK through staff reductions. A significant part of these reductions has now been implemented, and during the quarter, another 2% of the workforce has been given notice of termination. However, as always, it will take some time before the effect becomes visible in the P&L. All in all, this means that at the end of Q4, we will have reduced the number of full-time employees by more than 500 compared to Q3 last year. We are also progressing in realizing synergies from our acquisition of Elite in Poland. 14 branches has now been closed as part of the optimization plan. Another key part is improving efficiency through our new central warehouses in connection with the commission in of these facilities. We have vacated 4 out of the 6 facilities. And let's take a closer look where we stand with these projects, moving on to the next slide. The new high-tech warehouses are now operational, and together they represent a significant upgrade to our logistics capacity. In Norway, Denmark, and Finland, we are now handling goods with a high degree of automation. These hubs complemented the already automated warehouse in Sweden and together create a logistics network of very high international standard. The upgrades will naturally lead to several efficiency gains, including the reduction in the number of full-time employees. And as mentioned, we still bear some temporary costs, such as double rents and staffing, but we will gradually start to see the positive effects. And as it's usually the case with major warehouse automation projects, calibration and fine-tuning take time before the full potential is needed. This improved logistics capacity was also a key topic at our Capital Markets Day in September, where we presented several other important initiatives as well. So let's move to slide 5. One of the initiatives is an acceleration within exclusive brands. Among other things, we are launching the brand Every Part Matters in 7 new markets, meeting the demand from more price-sensitive customers. We're also expanding our e-commerce business. The webshop Mekster is launching in Finland and then later in Denmark, making this business present across the Nordics. In addition, we will grow our commercial vehicles business to establish a long-term leading position in this segment. These are only examples on how we're focused on increasing growth and improved profitability. I will hand over to Christer in just a minute, but first I would like to highlight some interesting findings from our newly released mobility barometer on slide 6. Even in these turbulent times, the car remains number one for all. As a matter of fact, more people are using the car every day compared to last year. These are a couple of many trends and findings in the new edition of our barometer, the largest study on mobility in the Nordics. And this is the fourth year in a row we're making this report, and I recommend reading it. That said, I hand over to Christer, who will elaborate on the third quarter, starting with our leverage, which has been in focus lately. Please.
Thanks, Per. So leverage is always an area of interest, but in this quarter more so than usual. And the reason is lower profitability, which has coincided with a period of heavy investment. This has put significant pressure on leverage, which increased from 2.7 in Q2 to 3.6 in Q3. Now, of this increase, no part related to an increase in net debt. And the increase is instead driven by two other factors of roughly equal size. To start, we see a lower underlying EBITDA gradually working its way into the rolling 12-month average used in the leverage calculation. Secondly, since we report leverage based on unadjusted EBITDA, items affecting comparability also matter. And as mentioned in the Q2 call, Q3 2024 included positive items affecting comparability. And that quarter is now replaced, if you will, by a new one with negative items affecting comparability. So this effect alone corresponded to a 0.6 increase in leverage. Now, 3.6 is high, both in relation to our targets and in relation to our financing agreements. And against that background, we have during Q3 agreed with our banks on certain amendments to the terms. And we have also, with the final steps being taken here in October, secured a one-time waiver from the bondholders through a so-called written procedure. And this change, which received strong support by the bondholders, is important because it enables us to execute the second tranche of the dividend decided upon by the AGM back in May 2025. So that payment of circa 110 million SEK will be done here in a few days. Looking at leverage in the longer perspective on page 8, one can see this has varied a bit throughout the years. We've seen periods of elevated leverage, followed by phases of recovery. And it's important here to reiterate that we remain committed to our leverage target. And getting back to the 2-3 range is a priority. We're taking actions for that to happen. One area of focus is working capital. And although this helped in Q3, one should not expect much support in the near term, as the fourth quarter is often seasonally weak. Another area is investment, seen on the next page, page 9. So in Q3, we see the investment rate coming down as we said it would. And this applies to CapEx as illustrated in the graph. But the slowdown also applies to other investments such as M&A, which we've not done any, and to the ERP project where we are now entering a less intense phase. So with those initial comments related to leverage, let's move on to profitability on page 10. Here we saw a slight uptick from Q2, but we're still operating at levels far below last year. So on a positive note, organic growth improved from minus 5% in Q2 to plus 1% in Q3, and cash flow from operations remained healthy. On the more challenging side, competition, as Per mentioned, remained ever present, which affected gross margins, as I will come back to on a later page. Project-related activity was still intense in Q3, and this can be seen in the elevated level of items affecting comparability, which include temporary staff involved in moving goods to the new warehouses. Some of this carries over into Q4, where we have now consolidated Sørensen & Barchen's warehouse operations into the new facility outside Oslo. And it's perhaps worth here reiterating how infrequent these kind of costs are. So our old facilities in Denmark and Norway had all been in operation for, on average, 20 years. And we look at these new investments with a similar horizon, so not a very frequent event for sure. Moving to gross margin on page 11, we've already commented on competition, which was particularly noticeable in Denmark and Poland. It's also so that growing in a lower margin market like Poland dilutes the consolidated level, and this country mix effect amount to circa 1 percentage point. And this effect should be less noticeable going into Q4, because now the comparables fully reflect the acquisition of Elite. Moving on and comparing adjusted EBIT with a year earlier, two areas stand out. So firstly, Sweden and Norway. Here, it's a combination of disappointing top line and higher fixed cost relating to the automated warehouse in Norway. Secondly, Poland, and here it's price pressure, which has been strong, and the integration of Elite, which is not yet complete. If we instead compare to Q2 on the next page, the picture looks a little bit different. So what is noticeable here is instead an improvement in Finland. It is, one should admit, from a low level, but still worth commenting. So let's start the business area by business area review with Finland on page 14. We are, as you can see, back in positive EBIT. Organic growth of 6% helps, and even though that has come with a different mix. Operationally, there are some good signs, and to exemplify, order lines per worked hour in the central warehouse is up 50% within 2025. And in fact, the actions that we've taken in Finland, which include automation and cost cutting, it is basically the same medicine as elsewhere, but the difference is that we've come further in Finland because we started earlier. So let's move to Denmark on page 15. Here we saw organic growth of 1%. Although measured in Swedish SEK, revenue was still down 2%. I already mentioned competition, which has led to lower gross margin in Q3. Looking ahead into Q4, the focus is to get into smooth operation in the central warehouse following the move, and we are not quite there yet. Moving to Poland and the Baltics on page 16. On the positive side, we see organic growth of 9%, but this has, however, come at lower margins. Operationally speaking, it's worth making a distinction between Poland and the Baltics in 2025. So in the Baltics, we have been operating in a steady state, generating decent profitability. In Poland, on the other hand, it's been everything but steady state. We've implemented several structural changes, which are indeed good for the long term, but there's no denying that they have affected operations in 2025. In Sweden, Norway, on page 17, top line development remained muted. EBIT margins still exceed 10%. But clearly, we are zoomed in on actions to improve traction in the market. In Norway, the new central warehouse is operational. And in Q3, there have been a lot of focus on getting ready for Sørensen & Barchen to move in, which happened here in the beginning of Q4. This leads over to the last business area on page 18. Sørensen & Barchen, another strong quarter, delivering adjusted EBIT of 44 million SEK. Q3 is also the last quarter where Sørensen & Barchen operate with its own independent warehouse. and Q4 will be a transition quarter towards a model where we instead split the cost of the new central warehouse across the two business areas in Norway. There are no new costs for the group, but for the business area Sørensen and Balchen, they will carry a larger part of the cost, affecting comparability with earlier quarters. So with that, I would like to point out and that we are also now vacating quite a few of the buildings that we have used. The period of double rent is coming to an end, and in total, if you count the external locations, we are now out of 5 out of 8, counting also external locations. So still a little bit to go, but almost there. So with that, I'd like to hand back over to Pär.
Thank you, Christer. Well, to summarize, Q3 meant a continuation of the intense competition we saw in Q2, which at the same time was a consequence of a slower market. We achieved organic growth of 1% during the period. This means we moved from negative growth in the first half of 2025 to showing a slightly positive sales trend in Q3. Our adjusted EBIT margin improved compared with the second quarter, but decreased compared to the same quarter 2024. And we're taking a number of actions to address this development. We are rolling out action for long-term growth and continue our cost-saving measures across the group to ensure we're better positioned as we enter 2026, as we don't expect the current market situation to change in the foreseeable future. So that was all from me. Thank you all for listening, and we will now open up for questions.
If you wish to ask a question, please dial pound key 5 on your telephone keypad to enter the queue. If you wish to withdraw your question, please dial pound key 6 on your telephone keypad. We kindly ask you to mute your phone after having asked your question. The next question comes from Andreas Lundberg from SEB. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Started off with cash flow, working capital swings in the third quarter, clearly positive. Can you maybe explain a little bit on the development in the third quarter, especially on payables? Thank you.
Good morning, Andreas. Yes, now as we say, morning. Cash flow was fairly strong in Q3. And in fact, if you were to go back a few years and compare to the trend over the year, you would see that Q3 is often strong. On the contrary, then Q4 is often on the weaker side. So I would say that taking the seasonal trend into consideration, the cash Q3 is not much of an outlier. Perhaps a little bit better than we anticipated, but not overly so.
But it's more of a normal trend, right? You would say nothing specific you have done on the working capital side.
We always manage the working capital the best of our ability, but nothing exceptional. And one should not kind of extrapolate this into Q4, because as I said, Q4 is normally on the weaker side.
But if you look out, you know, beyond Q4, how do you view the sort of working capital needs?
It's good to have the central warehouse project coming to an end, because that means we can start to optimize our inventories. And if anything, there should be a slight positive coming out of that, but we are not expecting any massive movements there.
Okay, cool. You talked about lower investment levels. Can you give like a guidance for 2026 CapEx?
So I think if you were to look at the Q3 number times 4, that's a fair assessment. Be in that graph that we're back towards more of what it means CapEx. This is where we should be. There are no big new investments on the horizon now for quite some time.
Cool. And then another question on you talk about competition, pricing and so forth. What can you do about it? And given that you're running some, you know, concept workshop chains. I mean, can you capitalize on that in some way, or how is it working? What can you do about it?
Yeah, but we can, of course, do a lot, and I think that it I mean, a lot of the price competition comes from the situation with supplier bonuses that everybody's fighting for volume, and of course that's important for us also to get some help in the gross margin. But the launch of Nectar in new countries, that's way of competing with e-commerce. We launched private ice fighter brand, Matt. But I will also say that maybe a little bit more long term, but our to help the affiliated workshops better with digital bookings, with fleet sales and so on. That's also where we see where we're not that sensitive in the price competition.
Okay, I think I lost you once in a while there, so but I can come back afterwards. I think you mentioned higher input cost in Sweden and Norway. What is that about?
I would say the primary change in the cost base in Sweden and Norway, if you look over a year, is the digital. We are now leaving the warehouse where President Barkin has been operating. There's a little bit of double cost coming out. Other than that, the development of cost in Sweden and Norway has been on the positive side. So we've been able to take out quite a bit of cost, caught in support functions mostly. But there could be no other big maybe, I don't know, were you looking at something specifically that we can comment?
Okay. Okay. The line is not very clear to me, but lastly then, can you update me on the one-time or non-recurring items? What remains? Thank you.
So the two bigger items that we've had over the last few quarters is partly the investment into the ERP project. This is now being run at a lower pace. That part come down. You can see it's specified in one of the notes. The other part are cost related to the warehouse move. And as we said on the call now, we're very close to being done with this. Some activities still carrying over into Q4. Maybe there will be a little bit of activity still in Q1, but we're close to the end of those. So with that, items affecting comparability should be coming down. And it's also fair to point out that in the 100 million cost savings program, we've not made any big accrual. And the staff reduction is most done through, I would say, normal negotiation with the union. So should not come with big cost.
Okay, thank you so much. That concludes my questions.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Mats Liss from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Well, a couple of questions here as well. Coming back to Finland, I mean, you managed to turn around to positive numbers here in the third quarter. Is it sort of a sustainable changeover, or are there any sort of one-offs included there which explain the improvement?
No, I wouldn't say so. We have a good growth in Finland, a little bit helped by more stability in the market, but also that we are gaining market shares, and we are well. I mean, we started already 1 year, 1.5 years ago with cost saving programs, and which really starts to kind of hit the P&L. They are also a little bit earlier in the phase of with the automation, so they start to have a very good effect on with that automation part. So I we have clearly ambition to continue to grow in Finland.
On the other hand, I mean, Poland Baltics is soft, but you have the Litpolska impact, and you have other. Then again, top line was pretty good. Is it? When could we expect you to break even there?
On Tuesday, 4 o'clock. No, joke. There is still job to be done in the integration. We said that it will take 18 months, and we are well in progress. I think Christian mentioned that 14 of the approximately 20 branches that we aim to close is done, but it's still work in progress. And then we have a strong competition, of course. So I wouldn't say in time, but we stick with the ambitions we had when we did the acquisitions, that we should be in much better shape during next year.
And maybe what I can add there, so in 2025, we've also been moving the warehouse in the Warsaw region, a big one, which has been quite an expensive project, and surely operations has not been running completely smooth during that process. But there's also some effects in 2025 from things we've done to improve the run rate going forward.
Good. And then maybe could you see, I mean, Andreas asked about the items affecting comparability and so on. Could you say something about the amount included in the third quarter? Overall, I mean, no.
So Q3 is not very different from the earlier quarters on this front. So the bigger items are the ERP project, which is now entering a slower phase. And then the other bigger part are the costs associated with the warehouse projects. And that part should also be coming down, because now, in fact, we are approaching the final stage of these projects. Then, as you know, items affecting comparability, they could be, things which you did not plan for. So I will not make any kind of projection for that item, but there's nothing big that we anticipate now.
No. And when I read quickly through the geographical, business segment there, I found 5 million in Poland Baltics, I think, and 5 million on other. Is it sort of on that level, 10, 15 million of extra costs?
There's a note also in the quarterly report, I think it's note 2, perhaps, where you can see more detailed but roughly what we covered here.
Okay, great. And the financial net was a bit softer than I expected. And these leasing obligations, are they also affected by when you sort of move out of warehouses? You get less lease obligations.
No, so on the financial items, there's a few things worth pointing out. So in other financial items, there's some FX and some other kind of one-off items. So I wouldn't factor those into your projections for the future. On the interest expense side, it could be good to remember that we've completed a tender offer for the old bond, but that was not 100% completion at that time. So in Q3, we've been carrying an excess debt of 500 million SEK, almost for the full quarter, even though at the end of the quarter here, we repurchased the final part. So that the interest expense on that excess debt amounts to circa 5 million SEK. That is not essence for the future quarters. And then finally, on the lease part that you mentioned, so we have now taken all of the facilities into use. So the run rate in Q3 includes everything that we are anticipating. It's also so, as you said, that we are now leaving some of the old premises, but the effect thereof is not very material. So one should expect the lease cost to kind of stay on this level for the future quarter. So also maybe just as a final comment then, of course, the bond issue that we did was issued at a lower rate compared to the bond that we repurchased. So over time, there's also a slight benefit on the external financing coming in here.
Great. And just to follow up on that one, I mean, you had to ask the bondholders there to get approval for the final dividend tranche there. Have that affected your the interest rates you pay going forward, or is it?
So this was completed after the end of Q3. So Q3 is not burdened by those costs, and they will be incurred over the lifetime of the financing. So it will not be like a one-off item. On the bond specifically, as you may recall, the waiver fee was 0.75% on a bond of 1.25 billion. So that's roughly 9 million SEK in costs for the one-off waiver. And then that will be incurred over the lifetime of the bond.
Okay, good. Limited impact. Good. Well, that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Anders Åkerblom from Nordea. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Per and Christer. This is Anders from Nordea. Just starting off a bit more high level, it would be interesting to hear some more color on the competitive dynamics that you discuss. I mean, from which actors in the market is this mainly coming from? Is it independent players, other e-commerce competitors, chains? Anything here would be quite interesting.
Yeah, I would say it's coming from everywhere is the easy answer, but that's also since it is a kind of a hunt for volumes due to the low demand in the first half year especially, which means that everybody's fighting to get on the right level for their supplier bonuses. So that affects everybody. Then if I should point out something, then yeah, e-commerce is more active, not extremely much, but maybe more active. We also have some of our European colleagues that works with a lot of export also to get volumes. But in general, it comes from all the players. Maybe if there's some part which is less or stable competition, that is the competition from the OEMs and from the authorized dealers, that's quite stable. But all actors in the independent aftermarket is fighting for volume simply.
Makes sense. Just following up on that, I mean, does that in any way kind of impact your consideration and perhaps how you think of the Mexter e-commerce platform going forward in
yeah.
any sense?
Yeah, it makes it more important to do what we have said we should do, and we are expanding now in two new geographical markets. It's capital light expansion since we have the platform, everything ready for it, but it still takes some time because it's new languages, it's a local distribution, and it could be different payment solutions. But we're on full throttle on that area to get into that business more actively.
Yep. Okay. And with regards to that, I mean, expanding into Finland and Denmark, as you mentioned, could you speak anything to the adoption rates here in the initial markets and kind of what your expectations are here going forward?
No, we do not disclose that. That's due to we don't want to give our competitors too much information at this stage.
No, makes sense. And finally, you mentioned that you expect the current market situation to kind of remain at these levels in the foreseeable future, if I heard you correctly. Is that maybe more relevant to think of these levels or the kind of first half levels? Just how should one think of that comment going forward?
Yeah, think of it like we reported Q3, that's where we are at the moment. What is very important is that it's very difficult to predict the future, because what I see at least is that the uncertainty around the consumer confidence and so on is as high as it was in Q2. Maybe in some of the markets a little bit lower interest starts to get a little bit better, but it's first of all too early to say, and so the outside factors we are still kind of very, very difficult to predict. So what we can do is, of course, to focus on our initiatives around growth, and especially maybe the cost savings program and so on.
Yeah, makes sense. Just a final question on that, if I may. I mean, apart from kind of the obvious things, What do you think would need to change for customers to kind of return to more normalized repair and maintenance patterns? And is there anything you can do specifically to kind of nudge customers in that direction, if you get my question?
Yeah, and it's a good question, but not that easy to answer. But I think the general economy of the consumers allows you to invest a little bit more on the car and other things, I think it's in this part of the the financial situation, when people start to get better, maybe it's not the car who gets the first money from that. But that's very difficult to predict. But of course, a better financial situation for the consumers will also lead to higher demand, because we see now that the people are delaying the service, only do what's actually necessary. That's not the normal. The normal is that we want to maintain the car to have a healthy life going forward. What we can do, again, is to address and be better in the different customer segments. We have the affiliate workshops who are very good in the customer who wants to have a easy car life, easy to book online and availability and so on. But now we're also launching the private label, which is for a little bit more price sensitive customers, so they can also kind of repair the car, even if it's a very old car and has a very low value. We have an offer for them also.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. I appreciate the answers, Per and Christer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Lena Berg from Danske Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Per and Christer. Some questions from me. So if I start here with the EBIT decline that you have experienced in 2025, could you specify how much that is attributable to lower pricing, so the higher price competition that you are seeing, and what could be attributable to other factors such as lower sales, higher fixed or variable costs? If possible,
maybe I start and then you can add on, Per. So currently we're running with an organic growth of plus 1%, so call it close to zero. So we haven't seen much volume growth in this year, and neither have we seen a big drop in volume. So in that sense, you could say it's kind of steady. What has been different this year compared to last year is that the price competition has been tougher. So we've had a negative impact on the gross margin. You could see it on one of the slides. Of course, in a business like ours, where gross margins are pretty high and fixed costs are also fairly high, that has a big impact on EBIT. So the pricing component is considerable here. Then, of course, if you look at EBIT, instead of looking at adjusted EBIT, you will also have the effects of the changes that we've been implementing. But if you instead look at adjusted EBIT, where we take out those costs, then you see sort of the underlying business, and that's where the gross margin has been the major component. But Per, please.
But I think that's covered.
Okay, so thanks. So if we would assume the same macros in 2026 as 2025, but your EBITDA would improve then because of the cost savings you're doing and also efficiency from the new warehouses, could you say anything on when you would expect your reported net debt to EBITDA to come back to your target level?
It's a valid question, but typically we try to avoid to give too much of projections since there are so many factors which we don't influence fully ourselves, like the market, for example. So I don't think we want to give a projection for that. What I can say is, however, that the actions that we're taking are very specific and think production, they don't have a very implementation phase. It's called months. So the effects from the actions we're taking should be normal.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you very much. That was my question.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please dial #5 on your telephone keypad. There are no more questions at this time, so I hand the conference back to the speakers for any closing comments.
Thank you all for listening. I wish you a great continue of the day. So thank you.